So what are the drugs that we have available to treat patients who have serious MRSA infections that have to be given IV medication? One drug is clindamycin, the dosage of which can go as high as 900 milligrams three times a day. Again, diarrhea and C. difficile positivity is a potential side effect. The mainstay of MRSA, or staphylococcal infections in general, through the years has been vancomycin. Vancomycin is often given at a dosage of 1 gram every 12 hours intravenously, but to be pharmacologically correct, the dosage is 15 milligrams per kilogram every 12 hours. Vancomycin must be infused slowly because of a so-called red man syndrome, and people can have chills and fever and a rash during the infusion. The dosage needs to be adjusted in renal failure, and trough blood levels need to be obtained to make sure the appropriate dosage is being given. The data still is not 100% convincing that with respect to vancomycin dosing, it is important that trough vancomycin levels be obtained. And although there has been a tendency for higher levels to treat serious MRSA infections, the data is still not completely available to absolutely establish the fact that higher levels are always more important versus the potential side effects of increasing nephrotoxicity. Another drug that we commonly give to treat certain type of MRSA infections is daptomycin, trade name Cubicin. The dosage of this drug, depending upon the infection being treated, is 4 to 6 milligrams per kilogram every 24 hours, a once-a-day infusion. The important things to realize about daptomycin are, one, this drug is not indicated for pneumonia because of pulmonary surfactant inhibiting the daptomycin. One also needs to check CPK levels, creatinine phosphokinase levels, because on occasion there can be elevated levels of the CPK secondary to the daptomycin. And rarely an eosinophilic pneumonia can occur when a patient is being treated with daptomycin. Another drug that we have access to for parenteral usage is tigecycline, trade name Tigecil, at a dosage of 100 milligrams loading dose and then 50 milligrams every 12 hours. This drug appears to be most useful in mixed infections, commonly intra-abdominal, occasionally soft tissue. Another parenteral antibiotic is intravenous linezolid at the same dosage as it is given orally, 600 milligrams every 12 hours. Again, the side effects of cytopenias, neuropathies, and a serotonin syndrome associated with serotonin selective reuptake inhibitors has to be investigated. A drug that has been available for several years but is commonly being used less often is the combination of quinupristin and dalfopristin. The problem with this drug is that it often causes phlebitis, arthralgias, myalgias, and several drug interactions. This drug is being used to a much less extent than it was a few years ago. A recently approved drug is called telavancin, which is somewhat similar in structure to vancomycin and is given at a dosage of 10 milligrams per kilogram every 24 hours. This drug only needs to be given once a day, which is obviously a major plus, but its side effects include the formation of foamy urine and a soapy taste in the mouth, prolongation of the QT interval, and it also has to be adjusted for renal failure patients. And more recently, the knowledge that this drug can cause fetal abnormalities makes it a drug that has to be used cautiously in women or those who are pregnant, and they should not get it at all. As we said before when we were talking about oral drug selection, we also need to be cognizant of the cost of parenteral drugs. For example, vancomycin, a 10-day course of intravenous vancomycin, has been calculated to be about $182. Daptomycin, $1,660. Linezolid, $1,560. Tigecycline, $1,362. As we continue to talk about intravenous antibiotic therapy for serious MRSA infections, the question often arises as to where should patients be treated? Should they all be hospitalized? Or if they are hospitalized, do they need to continue their therapy in a hospital setting, or can they be treated outside of the hospital? The potential choices are, one, treat the patient at home. This can be done on many occasions with a contract to a commercial company or even through a physician's office that supplies the appropriate personnel, drugs, and equipment. Oftentimes, patients will come to an infusion center on a daily basis or to a physician's office. The individual physician treating the patient, no matter where the patient is being treated, is ultimately responsible for the patient. And therefore, careful monitoring of anyone who is receiving outpatient intravenous antibiotic therapy is mandatory. In addition to the drugs being used to treat a patient on an outpatient basis, one should be familiar with the type of devices that are commonly inserted into a patient's vein to deliver the medication. One is a simple heparin lock. Unfortunately, this can only last for a few days and can be very irritating to the veins. One device is a midline catheter that can last for a couple of weeks. It's easy to put in, has a limited infection risk, requires a heparin flush, but is very convenient for many patients. And the third type is a so-called PICC line, peripherally inserted central catheter, which can last for weeks or months. On the other hand, one needs a person familiar with the insertion of a PICC line. It requires heparin flushes. It can cause phlebitis, clotting, and can be secondarily infected. Don't underestimate the cost of a PICC line. This is some data from a patient that I have taken care of who had a PICC line inserted. And when one adds the supplies involved, the diagnostic chest X-ray, and presuming the patient is receiving a drug such as vancomycin, the total patient cost for this insertion plus one dose of vancomycin was $2,419. I believe that PICC lines are probably inserted more often than they need to be. So in summary, when we are treating a patient who has a community-associated MRSA infection, the decision about which antibiotic to use is a clinical decision. The decision as to where the patient should be treated is not only determined by the attending physician or other healthcare provider, but may have to be influenced by third-party payers. And what is appropriate treatment will not only be decided by science and good medical practice, but also by economic factors that have to be taken into consideration. If we are not cognizant of the increasing rate of MRSA infections, and we don't treat our patients appropriately, then obviously the number of infections will increase, the severity of infections will increase, and if we are using the wrong drugs, invariably more and more drug resistance will develop. So it's imperative we look at the big picture in addition to the individual patient.